Chapter 15. The Dread Feast.
If music is nourishment for the soul, what then of screaming?
Conrad Kurz, the Night Haunter. After the shame of my defeat, I became lost for a time. Kurz did not visit me. Ferris's malignant presence was conspicuous by its absence, and I even started to miss the shade of my dead brother. There was only the stench of the dead, rising over the hours and days to a noisome fume that filled my senses with the stink of failure. Ferris had been right. I was weak. I could not save the mortals from their fate. I could not beat Perturabo's death trap. Kurz had changed tactics. I had no idea why. Instead of trying to punish my body, he had decided to punish my conscience. The effects were enervating. Cut adrift amongst my fractured thoughts, I sat unmoving in the darkness of my cell, and in that moment I'm not too proud to admit that for the first time I truly knew what it was to despair. Suns rose and fell, stars were born and died again, the cosmos shifted around us, and after a while time ceased to have meaning. I was a statue of onyx, my arms hanging by my sides, my forehead touching the ground. Arch-backed, too wounded to do anything but breathe, I felt the slow atrophy of my limbs and the hunger in my chest. Vigor was leaving me, as steam flees cooling metal, and I welcomed it. To die would be a mercy. A legionary can live for many days without sustenance. His physiology is enhanced to such a degree that he can fast like this and still march, fight, and kill. Our father made his sons even stronger still, but I knew, as a man who knows he is dying of cancer, that I was not myself. My humours were out of balance. The many woundings Kurz had subjected me to, the mental tortures, were beginning to take their toll. At my lowest ebb, when even my will was fading, I slipped into blessed oblivion and let it take me in. My peace was not to last. A sound like a distant stream trickling next to my ear brought me to my senses. I realized as I opened my eyes that I was still in the deathly chamber, but that now it was filling with water. It chilled my face, lapping up against my cheek. Lips parched, tongue leathern, I tried to drink, but found the water brackish and metallic tasting. My guts churned, hunger gnawing, threatening to devour me from within. Too weak to stand, to even lift my body, I could only watch and see the open sluices at the base of the walls admitting this languid torrent. I saw the spark of electricity a moment later, and had only a few seconds of realization before the shock hit and I was jerked off the ground in a bone-wrenching spasm. My wretched frame, emaciated from lack of food and water, groaned. My muscles, partially atrophied from lack of use, burned. My throat, dry as desert ash, could barely muster a scream.
Vulcan!
As if I were trapped in a deep well, my savior calling down to me from above, I heard my name.
Vulcan!
It repeated, only this time the voice was clearer. I was reaching for the light, kicking hard to breach the surface and end my submergence.
Vulcan, you must eat.
As my eyelids snapped open, I discovered I must have passed out and had regained consciousness in a different part of the ship. I was sitting down. My hands and feet were bound. Opposite me, sitting across a broad banquet table, my dead brother grimaced at me.
Take your fill,
he said, hollow eye sockets gesturing to the feast arrayed before us.
You must eat.
We were sitting in a long gallery. Ornate candelabras, steeped in dust, provided a flickering luminescence. Above us, silver chandeliers swayed lightly on a stagnant breeze. Gossamer thin strands conjoined them like the webs of some ancient and long-dead arachnid. Similarly, the feast itself was swathed in a fine and farinaceous veneer of grey-white. I smelled meat, but here and there the scent was somehow wrong, as if some of it was spoiled or raw. There were fruits and bread that both bore the suggestion of mould, despite their ostensible freshness. Carafes of wine littered the table in abundance, but in some the grapes were bad, the vintage corked and unpalatable. Despite the decaying feast, I salivated at the prospect and struggled impotently against my bonds to taste it.
"Eat, Vulcan," Ferus urged. "You are wasting away, brother."
I tried to speak, but my throat was so raw I barely managed to croak.
"Speak up,"
said Ferus, his lipless mouth champing open and shut, the darkness of his tongueless mouth gaping and black, but somehow still able to form words. With a skeletal hand, he made an expansive, sweeping gesture.
"We all want to hear what you've got to say."
Until that moment, I had not noticed the other guests. 17 men and women sat around the banquet table. Like the other prisoners Kurz had shown me, these humans were both army and imperial citizenry. I even saw some remembrances amongst the host, and one who bore a resemblance to Verus. Of all the guests, he was the only one who seemed calm and unaffected by it all. It could not be the remembrancer, of course, for Verus was not a man in the strictest sense. He was merely a mantle, thrown about the shoulders of a being who wore it like a simulacrum of a man. Skin stretched across their bones like thin parchment. Lips were drawn back over their gums, eyes hooded with dark rings of fatigue. The mortals were evidently being starved, too. Unlike me, though, they were not bound. Instead, I noticed their hands had been removed at the wrist.